A billion years ago, there was nothing but space. Then one of God's wet farts blew all the planets in place. There were no signs of life on Mars or Venus, but planet Earth was blessed with two baby geniuses. Baby geniuses, we know everything. Baby geniuses, we know everything. Baby geniuses, we know everything. Baby geniuses, tell us something we don't know.
Hello, babies! Welcome to Baby Geniuses. I'm Emily.
I'm Lisa.
Thanks for listening to our show. Oh my gosh. This has been... So we record at two-week intervals, and this has felt like the longest 2 weeks wait to
it
me.
Has.
I've been just dying to talk to you about so much stuff this week.
I feel like I haven't seen you in months.
I know. It's been a long couple weeks.
It has. So eventful.
So eventful. Let's talk about, before we start the show, or, you know, this is part of the show, we should talk about It's Max Fun Drive.
That's right.
I'm really, really excited that we're finally doing the Max Fun Drive. If you don't know, Max Fun Drive is the time of year when we ask you to become a member of Max Fun to support the show. And we're so grateful. I mean, it's already been going on for a week. We weren't on last week, so we haven't talked about it, but we've already gotten a bunch of new members.
Yeah.
Which is great. And we're really grateful that because of Max Fun members, we can keep doing the show during this time.
Yeah, that's why we're doing the drive right now. We want to remind you that you're the reason we can make this content for you to enjoy. Max Fun's an audience-supported network, so that means we're free to make the content you enjoy because people like you contribute.
Yeah, so we'll talk about it more throughout the show, but if you want to give, choose a monthly amount that's comfortable for you. Most people give $5 a month or $10 a month, and some upgrade to $20, $35, or even $100 per month or more. It's really just about what works for you. And I think one new thing this year that's pretty cool is you can gift memberships. I think they weren't able to do that before, and
now they can,
which is awesome because we know that a lot of people, their situations have changed.
Yeah.
Maybe they were members before. They can't be members anymore. But if you happen to be in a situation where you can give memberships, now's a great time to do it because it's the drive. Thank you all so much for listening to our show, for supporting our show, for becoming a member. There's just as many fun prizes and gifts and cool things going on with the Max Fun Drive this year as there is every year, even though other things about it are a little different.
Yeah.
But let's also get into... some very important.
Very important.
My notes for what to talk about at the beginning of the show are 100% food related.
Oh, yeah.
I have four different food things that I want to talk about.
That's a lot. Should we save any for the next? I mean, maybe not.
We'll see how much we get through. I mean, it's so hard to know. Like, was this just a particularly exciting couple of weeks or... Or is life just going to be this wild from now on? I don't know.
Wow, which one should we start with?
I don't know. Well, first, let's start with the checks story. You sent this to me, and I
just had a feeling that you were the only person I sent this to. I just like had a feeling that I needed to tell you about it specifically. I don't know why.
I appreciate that so much. There have been things like that I think I've sent you recently as well.
Yeah. I just knew you would get it. I tried to explain it to some other people later, and they didn't really get it, but that's okay. That's fine.
It's so interesting how certain... I mean, I realize we're being super vague about this, and I think you'll understand what we mean once we start getting into it, but there are things like this where it's like, I don't think I could ever necessarily explain this to certain people in my life.
It's fine. It's fine. They just have different tastes, so to speak. So, in 2004... The Kellogg's Corporation in Korea decided to hold like a promotional contest where people could vote for the new president of Chex.
Well, it was like a new Chex flavor or wait.
No, it was
the new president. Oh, my God.
And the two candidates were the chocolate Checky and the hideous green Chaka. And Checky said that if they won, they would find a way to add more chocolate to chocolate Chex. And then Chaka, the green one, said that if they won, they would imbue the cereal with stinky green onions. And people were like, oh, of course, you know, Kellogg's was like, yes, people will vote for the chocolate one. Great.
Yeah, kids will hate green. The kids hate green onions. So
yeah, but then Kellogg's forgot the internet is full of people who have a great sense of humor. And so they tried to rig the election in favor of the chocolate checky, but it was too late. So like everybody was voting for the green onion guy.
Yeah. And they were like, oh no, the green onion guy is winning. What are we going to do? They tried to rig it and they failed.
Yeah. And so everyone was like super pissed off because they basically like swayed it in favor of the chocolate guy, even though that's not what people actually wanted. And so now,
So the green onion guy won, and then they were like, they didn't make the cereal.
They didn't do, yeah.
They promised that they were going to release this like green onion cereal if the heel won, basically, if the green onion guy won, and they just didn't do it. And this was 16 years ago.
And it was just fucked. It was like a totally rigged election. It's like, you're not giving the people what they actually voted for. It's totally fucked. But that finally, now, Kellogg's is releasing green onion flavored Chex. And they made a commercial for it. And it's insane.
The commercial is unbelievable. Please watch the video. So it's like,
he's kind of like the Riddler.
Yeah. So there's this character in the video wearing like an all green suit and like fedora. He's like the Riddler meets the Mask. Why did Jim Carrey only play green suited weirdos in these movies? It's another interesting question I have.
It's like that color just sort of like signifies like, okay, now shit's about to get fucking crazy. Yeah.
Oh, wait, the Mask was wearing yellow, I'm sorry, but the Mask itself was green. Okay, anyway. Itself,
it's like that lime green color. It's just like, it's like, okay, Monster Energy drink, like it just
yes.
signifies a certain level of I don't know, insanity.
But that, yeah, so the video depicts all of these, I think, reasons why it took so long for them to get the cereal out. It's like them doing like weird science with the green onions. At first, okay, without knowing what they were saying, I had no idea what was happening. But then I sent it to my friend Jason, who is from Korea, and translated it for me. And he said that it's basically them just saying, we're sorry, we're sorry, we're sorry, over and over again, until finally they say, we're sorry it took so long.
Yeah.
Because, so it's an explanation of why it took so long.
But then the premise of the ad also seems to be like, this is a terrible, bad flavor, and it smells bad, and it's crazy, and this is like...
Everyone's crying and upset.
Yeah, and at some point, it kind of looks like a funeral procession of them carrying the boxes of green onion Chex. It's like, it's really crazy.
They look
crazy.
Like pallbearers carrying a coffin full of onion-flavored cereal.
I love that, because it... Onion flavored Chex on its own doesn't sound bad. It just sounds like something that would be delicious in Chex Mix. But when you consider that it's a cereal and you're supposed to pour milk on it, that's when
that's when shit gets real fucked up.
Yeah.
But what if you just poured like buttermilk ranch on it?
I love it. I want to taste it.
I want to taste it so bad.
Can someone send it to us? Like, how do we get this? I know it's harder to get like international shipments now than ever, but like, I would really like some.
I know. I asked Jason to try and use his connections in Korea to get me some. And he was like, do you think I know everyone in Korea? And I was like, no, but, and then like 2 seconds later, he was like, maybe my cousin can mail it. I was like, yes.
Do we have any fans in South Korea?
Do we have any fans in South Korea who are willing to... apparently, these are really rare, but someone on YouTube, I think, I haven't watched it, made a video of himself trying it. Should we watch that?
Maybe later.
I want to know. So that's one amazing food story. What?
I'll pay for shipping.
Of course, yes, yeah. We would never ask you to pay to ship this stuff. We will pay you for shipping and for your time.
We will ask you to pay for other things, but never this.
I wonder if there are any on eBay, actually.
Oh, my God.
Wait, I'm looking it up.
Emily's hacking.
I'm in.
She's hacking into the...
Oh, you can get it on eBay.
Oh, hell yeah. Is it expensive?
It's like $25.
Hmm.
Which to me, and this is a 2-pack. Okay, wait. Yeah,
2-pack. That's enough for both of us.
I'm buying this, even though it's definitely a scam. Probably,
oh,
right?
Oh dear.
eBay's like, did you mean Onion Chef? Oh boy. Okay, so that's one food story. I mean, I love any story about, you know, internet scamps ruining a corporation's plan. But then the corporation finally going along with it is so funny. Apparently people would, every year on the anniversary of the fraudulent election, would post like pray for Chaka or the or something, God, like hashtags about it. It's so funny that people like kept at it for so long.
I love that.
I love it so much. Do we want to talk about Squirrel at all?
Oh, yeah.
We don't have to, but there's just been so much food news this past couple weeks that have been just so crazy. There's this really fancy toast restaurant in LA that's like not even supposed to be fancy, but it's like a hipster toast restaurant that like...
Which I hate. I tried eating there twice and I hate it. I'm sorry. Really? The food is so tart. Like, I don't understand. It's all tart and there's no other flavor to it. And it's weirdly bland at the same time. Like, I just don't like it.
Well, apparently you don't like the taste of mold because their jams were moldy and they were scooping the mold out of the buckets. Just the whole story is so crazy.
Never ate the jam.
I did eat the jam.
Oh my God.
And I had a jar of it in my fridge for a while.
Ah!
Yeah, I thankfully got rid of it, I think, before eating too much of it. But
I just love the, like, the explanation was like, oh, well, we consulted with this, like, food scientist or whatever, and they said this amount of mold is fine. And the scientist was like, they've never spoken to me before, and I don't think that it's fine at all at this level of production. And then they were like, oh, and you know, we're just a small business and we're trying to get by, and so the health inspections, like, that's why we didn't let them in. And it's like, you're like the hottest restaurant in LA, one of them. Like, yeah.
Lines around the block that were like really tough for their neighbors to deal with. Like,
yeah,
it was like a classic, like the most gentrifying restaurant of all time.
They were like blocking off a part of their kitchen, not letting health inspectors know that that was there, and like locking people in that back room. Yeah.
They were making jam on site and then telling inspectors that it was made off site. And when health inspectors came, they would just like lock employees in the jam room and pretend that it wasn't there. And
unbelievable.
And one thing that I find really interesting about, because I feel like there have been so many stories over the last few years of these really like hot, buzzy businesses, like quote unquote disruptors. For some reason, this reminds me of WeWork too.
Yeah.
Where it's just sort of like this almost like
Emperor's New Clothes-y kind of feel.
Yeah. These like people of our generation, these like millennial business owners who get a ton of press for doing something that seems kind of new and almost like too good to be true. That's like they figured out how to sell to their peers in a way that's like filling some kind of need. And then it turns out they have no idea how to run a business.
It's like, or they're just like the Elizabeth Holmes thing too.
Yeah.
Just like saying you can do something that you can't actually deliver on, but you're just getting shit tons of investor money.
And what I want to know is, okay, so like we're really familiar with the concept of imposter syndrome. Like that's something that we talk about. And what I want to know is, are these people who did not have imposter syndrome, or are they people who dismissed their own incompetence as like their fears about their own incompetence? Were they just like, oh, I'm just suffering from imposter syndrome. Nobody knows how to pass a health inspection. Like were these people telling themselves that like they just needed to be more confident, or were they not suffering? I just want to get in their heads, kind of.
Me too. I think there's so many different things going on. Probably being a psychopath is one of them, but like also just convincing yourself that you're a good person and that when you bend the rules, it's okay. I think that there's a lot of that too. I mean,
yeah.
We see it all the time, like people who think, well, I don't have to wear a mask all the time because I won't get sick. Like, it's just people kind of convince themselves that everything's fine. And it's like, no, we all need to follow the rules.
Or they're like, maybe I am a genius. Like, maybe no one else does it this way because, like, I'm a I'm an innovator.
Which is rough because you need a little bit of that, I think, in order to like have the chutzpah to try to do something, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't know. Sometimes I have to convince myself like, yes, I am a creative genius. And that's why, you know, this script I'm turning in is brilliant. And then I look at it later and I'm like, none of these jokes are funny.
I feel like that all the time.
Yeah. You need, but yeah. I, you know, bop back and forth between those extremes of like, I suck and I'm brilliant. So I don't
know. But I'm not making like food that has like specific safety standards that it legally needs to abide by.
Yeah, I'm not serving food with mold scraped off it. Like, Jesus Christ. Also, like, their jam recipe book was supposed to come out, like, next week.
I know. And are they still going to release it? I haven't actually been keeping up with the story that much.
I have no idea. And I'm sure, but I'm sure there's plenty of people who, like, love that restaurant so much that they'll just continue to...
Or people who just, like, won't have, like, heard the story or I don't know. That's the thing where I'm like, how – it's so hard for me to tell. I mean, you just deactivated Twitter, which is interesting.
Yeah, I got fed up with it. I don't know. I was having, like – I was feeling, like, emotional and bitchy that day is part of it. But I also just felt like I feel anxious and mortified every time I tweet. So why do I still have this? And I feel I wasn't even getting that many, like, weird – replies or mentions, but I just feel like I'm someone who feels harangued very easily.
Yeah.
And I think, also,
yeah, I think you are the type of person who like your boundaries, I think are different than other people's, not like you're a weirdo, but just, I mean, like, especially people who are like super comfortable being like online and accessible. I think like you're a surprisingly private person, and
which is weird because I broadcast everything like on this podcast. But like I just need to put up boundaries in order to like protect myself mentally, like in order to get anything done and feel like a whole person. And I feel like being on public Twitter like made me feel like I was being treated like a company instead of like an individual in a really strange way that really felt dehumanizing, which sounds like a really like dramatic way to describe that because I'm not actually being attacked or anything, but I just felt like people would tweet at me the same way they tweet at like a Best Buy when their order's missing, like that same tone. And I do just to get that over and over again was really upsetting and annoying to me. I don't provide customer service all day long for everything I do. Like that's just not.
Yeah. And I think that there's like sort of this ever shifting expectation of what you owe people when you are like on social media. And that feels like one of those things where you're like, oh, I don't, it's not even like, oh, I don't want to like, I don't want to do anything for other people. It's more just like, oh, well, like I am not prepared to accept all those responsibilities. So I'm going to opt out of this thing.
I can't. I just can't. I don't have time. And I also really, I know it's just like, well, then just ignore those things. But I can't. Like, I feel like I really want to help people, too. So when people come to me with questions, I want to answer them. And it's really difficult for me to just pretend they don't exist. But it's like, I literally, like, don't even sell any of my own merch. Like, I'm selling it through this gallery. I'm selling it through, like, imprint.com. But then people will still come at me with, like, oh, my print is missing. Or this thing is late. Or how do I order this? And it's like, you can figure this all out without me. And I've structured it that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm just,
yeah, even navigating which questions to answer or not is its own type of work that you like would have to budget your time for and your mental energy for. Yeah.
And I'm just too cranky for it. But, I think, you know, I might reactivate in like a month, when I need to promote something or whatever.
I mean, the reason I brought it up is because it's like, I wonder how people who are not on like Twitter will feel about the Squirrel Cookbook, you know, like, and things like that. And like, there was an article that came out last week about the, like, the work environment at the Ellen DeGeneres show, like at Ellen.
Yeah.
Where it was like a lot of employees talking about like a toxic and racist and unsupportive work environment. Like, and, you know, like people being fired basically for taking mental health leave and like,
but how much of her audience actually cares about that?
That's my question is I'm like, does her audience care? Does it matter? Like, not that it doesn't matter. I mean, like, it matters to me and it matters to, I think, other people in the industry. But, like, will it make a dent in in a daytime talk show that seems sort of like, it seems like Ellen tries to serve as a bridge between the internet and people who are not on the internet. Cause she's like, let me tell you about Damn Daniel. You know what I mean? Like, but it's
Daniel.
Yeah.
Had to do it. It's not like I'm tapping out entirely. Like, I'm still lurking, you know, I'm still like looking at the headlines of what's happening. And like, I have, you know, friends who are just like, oh, this crazy shit's happening. And I'll lurk and look and be like, oh, what's the discourse today? Like, I'm not totally like blocking myself off from that stuff.
Yeah. Every so often I'll like take a couple days off and then I'll look at the trending topics and be like, I can't imagine all of the stuff I'd need to do to catch up with what people are talking about.
Oh my God. Today, this morning I looked at what my friends were talking about Twitter, and they were like, oh yeah, some animator like has tweets about how she wants to be a cannibal, and
like, what,
and everyone is freaking out about it. Like,
oh my God,
it's just very funny.
Part of it feels like, I think like it feels like the cancellations are coming down the pike a lot faster these days, just because there's nothing else going on.
Like, yeah.
Not that there's nothing else going on. There's quite a bit going on, but it's just like everyone is at home. Everyone's online right now. Like,
yeah. Well, and it's just, it's weird that it's a space where like weird ass QAnon people are like interacting with like hip millennials and like liberals. Yeah. It's just a weird space.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, is like Nick Cannon started like spouting off like weird conspiracy theories from the internet, like anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, like on his like syndicated radio show. There's like all of these like lines between like quote unquote real media and quote unquote like, you know, internet fake media. It's like everything's blurring.
Yeah.
Oh, it's terrifying.
I feel like every week, like hashtag Jews will be trending, and it's never good.
I'm like, I don't want to click on it.
I don't want to click on that.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah.
Well, here are a couple other food things. Although, if you wanted to jump in with your own food or non-food related topic to talk about, please. but I had like one big success and one big failure in the kitchen this week.
Oh.
One big success. So I've been growing these peppers, these like sugarish peach peppers is what they're called. And they're like peach colored. They like don't get fully orange, and they're like really spicy, but not as spicy as habaneros, but I'd say like more spicy than maybe like a jalapeno.
Oh.
But they're like a light peachy, like, you know, yellowy orange pink color. Anyway, I made jalapeno poppers with them, but not jalapeno, obviously.
Were they good?
They were so good.
Oh my God.
It was so good. I'm like, I need to make more, but it took a really long time. and then, so that was like a big success. I'm feeling really good about that.
Yeah.
And then my big failure was I got these like frozen pie crusts, and I decided to use them to make like, at first, I was going to make quiches with them, but then I think they had too much sugar in them. So I decided, I was like, I guess I need to make some kind of fruit thing. And my friend had given me these yuzus, and I was like, ooh, maybe I'll make like a yuzu tart.
Oh.
And so I baked the crust for a little while, because you're supposed to bake that first and then put the custard in and then bake it again.
And yuzu is like kind of citrusy, right? Like,
yeah, it's a citrus, and it's kind of like a little bit sweeter than a lemon, I think.
Yeah.
It's hard to describe, but it's really good. And I baked the crust, and then I took it out, and it was in just like one of those like sort of like thin foil pie tins. But I didn't realize, because when I had first taken it out of the freezer, it was frozen. It was really firm. And after I baked it and filled it with the custard, it was not as firm. And so as I was putting it in the oven, the custard, which is just like basically just like eggs and sugar and yuzu juice.
It's like a soup.
It's a soup, like an egg soup spilled all over my hot oven.
No.
Immediately like cooking against the hot surface of the oven too.
Oh,
making
no.
This like eggy, gooey, burned like coating. And at first I was like, I'll wipe it up and then I'll just bake the thing. And then it was just like, immediately started smoking. I had to like open the windows and stuff. I had to like take the tart out. I put, you know, whatever. I put tinfoil over it and put it in the fridge. But then like, I want to say I spent like a good 4 or 5 hours trying to clean my oven.
God, that's the worst.
It took so long. It is so hard to clean. I have so much respect for people who do this on a regular basis. Yeah. Like, oh my God, why is it so hard to clean an oven?
Don't they have like a self-cleansing mode or some shit? I don't know what that is or how that works.
You know how it works? It turns your oven up to like 550 degrees and it just burns everything off the walls. So you can't really be in the house because it just like, if you have allergies of any kind, it's just like horrible. It's just like burning smell and stuff. And they have a steam clean function, but that is like not, I was like, it's egg. I have to get the egg off. And so I had to use like, I used baking soda and I made like a baking soda paste and it was just like on my knees. And then I like was wiping up the like baking soda paste with these paper towels and I put it in the trash. And then Alan went through the trash.
No.
Because he smelled like a little bit of yuzu and egg on it, I guess. It was just like, it was such a disaster. Just for days and days, it was a disaster. Anyway, I got a, I got a cold sore from the stress.
That's awful.
It was awful. So things are up and down over here.
It's up and down every day.
Yeah. what's going on with you?
I've been getting some strange, more and more strange horse opinions DM'd to me on Instagram. and they are exclusively from, okay, I don't have a problem with vegans, but they are from vegans who have like never interacted with horses and have very strong opinions about how to interact with horses, even though they haven't. I got this really long message about how horses are wild and I should release my horse into the wild or else I'm being cruel.
Oh my God.
And about how riding them is cruel and about how the horse is only letting me ride her because she knows that I will exchange food and boarding for her service of letting me ride her, which is not something a horse can like conceptualize.
Yeah, I don't think
horses do not have like a transactional.
Horses
like,
don't understand the economy.
They don't. No. So that's also weird. And I normally I wouldn't respond to someone like this, but she was a fan of mine. You know, she like followed me and like likes my art and stuff. So I was sort of like, how, you know, have you ever interacted with a horse? Like
you responded?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, what's going on? You know, and she was like, I've only interacted with wild horses. I only know wild horses from like, you know, wild horses, how? and she was like, yeah. And I also don't think that dogs should be kept as pets. And then she compared it to human trafficking.
Oh no.
She was like, how can animals be bought and sold when you can't put you can't put a price on a life? I'm like, but ma'am, this is livestock. Like you absolutely can put a price on a horse. And we went back and forth and she couldn't really have an argument beyond this. And she kept just saying like, I really just hoped you would see my point of view and reconsider. I'm like, reconsider what? What do you
consider? What? Letting your horse that has no,
she's not wild.
Yeah. She would not survive in the wild.
No, she would not. It would be like letting me loose into the wild. Like I can't even go camping without thinking I'm going to die. Like my horse has no ability to survive. Also, wild horses have a horrible life.
Like
most of them starve to death. Like their teeth get worn down, their feet are in bad, you know, they really have a rough time. So it's not a great life. They mostly get rounded up in the US and people try to adopt them out because it's so awful for them.
Yeah, they have like really vicious fights with each other over territory and stuff. And they get like left to die.
Yeah. It's not a good life. Like you have this romantic vision of what it's like for a wild horse and it's really, that's not accurate. And yeah, my horse is domesticated. So I was kind of just like, what do you think, where do you propose I put her? Like, what are you talking about? And then she just kind of backed down and was like, I just don't like seeing horseback related content. I'm like, well, then you should unfollow me.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I still want to keep following. Like, it's okay for me to follow people I disagree with. And I'm like, yeah. But like your argument fell apart like wet paper. Like, do you want to go back to the Ice Age and undo like all of the evolution of like the relationship between humans and domesticated animals? Because that's,
I mean, like, okay, so I'm a vegetarian. I understand that there are like, there are systems I'm trying to undo. I would be happy if we changed the way our like food system worked, if we stopped breeding cattle, if we stopped like using so much of our land for that. But like, there's a difference between being like super invested in the status quo of like the factory farming industry and like owning a dog.
Yeah, like, also, it's like, yes, there is abuse and exploitation of all animals, and there are horseback riders who are really terrible to horses. This is true. But to come at me when you don't know anything about horseback riding and to come at me and accuse me of basically exploiting my horse is such a strange thing, because it's like my hobby isn't just like sitting on her. Like, it's caring for her like the best way possible. She has a chiropractor appointment today. Like, just she doesn't even need it. She just really enjoys it, and it helps her loosen up her tight muscles. I haven't had a massage in like a year, but she can. Like, I'm very mindful of how my horse feels. Like, some days she's sore and I go easier on her. Like, some days I don't ride her at all. I just take her for a walk because that's the mood we're in. Like, it's very much a relationship. So
I mean, I guess my question is, okay, so, like, this seems like a really first thought reaction to, like, and, like, an unsort of, like, educated reaction to, like, horseback riding in general. But, like, you're someone who has experience and knowledge and understanding. Like, do horses like being ridden?
It's such a complicated topic because they love to go out. Like, when I go get my horse, she often, like, she snorts at me and a hello. She comes right up to the stall door and tries to push out. Like, she's excited to go.
Yeah.
She likes being out. And when I ride her out, she's like, her ears are perky. Like, I can tell she's in a good mood. Would she prefer I not sit on her? Maybe.
Yeah.
I can't tell that she particularly enjoys being ridden, but she doesn't seem to have a super strong opinion. Yeah. And here's the thing. If a horse doesn't want you on its back, it will get you off its back.
Yeah. And like, Alan hates his harness, but he loves to go on a walk. And he doesn't like knowingly make the trade, but he could like bite me and he could like avoid putting the harness, but he knows that the harness is part of the, he wouldn't not go out, you know?
Exactly. Like, this is how we go out, and we are doing this sport together.
And if I took Alan out without a harness or a leash on, he could die. He could get hurt. Yeah. He could hurt other animals. Like,
oh yeah. I mean, that's why I have a bit in her mouth. It's for our own safety. Like, you know, I want to stop her from, you know, running off a cliff with me. But I think people who don't ride horses also don't like understand the partnership it is. Like, it's not just me coercing her into doing something. It's like, we're learning together. And like, horses do get a sense of accomplishment. Like, when they figure something out and you're like, yay, good girl, you did it. They feel good. And they act like there's one horse who used to do like a celebration, like series of crow hops, which is like a little buck every time she did something right and figured it out. 'Cause she would get so excited and happy. Like, I think people don't quite understand that animals have different feelings about working the way humans do.
Yeah. Well, and we've also been breeding these animals for generations to, like, isolate the ones who respond well to training and not just the ones who comply, but the ones who, like, enjoy it. Like, we breed them to enjoy it. And that is a fucked up thing that we've done, but we've done it. And we've now done we it. Have these animals that need to be cared for.
They do. I can't just release my horse in the wild. She was trained for riding. Like, she wags her tail when we work sometimes. Like, she's just like, do-do-do. Like, I'm just like, you don't know. I don't know. It's really strange.
And it was someone, just,
I had someone else comment like, oh, you use your horse as a chair, sad face. And I was like, yeah, I do. She's absolutely my chair.
Yeah. Oh man, God.
Well, it's a really complicated and interesting subject. So I've been thinking about it a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. I mean, it's super complicated, but it is really like, it is really weird when people are like, well, I am assuming you've thought about this choice, not at all.
I know. I think about it all the time about her own comfort level. Like I can gauge her moods. Also, I mean, I responded to this person finally. I was like, I don't think this is the right way to enact change. Like, I don't think DMing individual horse owners to tell them to quit horses is going to actually accomplish anything. So maybe you should try to raise money for like a animal rescue or something like that. And she was like, oh, good idea.
Wow.
I'm like, you're just, the way you're doing, going about this, it's like just to make yourself feel self-righteous. It's not actually going to change. I'm not going to change. I'm sorry.
Well,
I'm
she was saying, she was like, I'm uncomfortable seeing these images. So she tried to displace her discomfort onto you instead of just unfollowing you too.
Right.
And it was
Or about learning more about it instead of just basically rattling off a PETA pamphlet to me. I don't know. It was just, it's interesting. Oh, boy. So I've gotten a bunch of those.
And you're like, and you're off Twitter, but Instagram is where you get these messages.
I mean, at least on Instagram, I can, you know, just ignore them or delete weird comments I get. Everyone at the barn thought this was really funny. They're still talking about it weeks later. They're really delighted. They're just like, Lisa, have you gotten any more messages? Like, they love it.
That's so funny.
Yeah, because they're just, and every time we are with our horses, we're just like, oh, we're abusing them. They hate us. And the horse is like rubbing all over us like a giant puppy. Like, it's just.
And you're just like brushing her hair
for hours. Yeah. It's so funny.
Oh my God. I have an endorse horse.
Oh, okay.
Baby geniuses endorse, letting nature take its course. Endorphins pump from the source when they hop up on that horse. Two babies, one endorse horse.
Endorse horse.
Endorsing services and items, no remorse. Two babies, one endorse horse.
Endorse horse.
Riding off into the sunset, now here's something we endorse.
I've got two endorse horses.
All right.
Should I save one for another time, or should I do them both now?
Whatever you want.
I want to endorse horse a book that I thought was really funny called James Acaster's Classic Scrapes. He's a very funny stand-up comedian who, I think I met him doing some festival, the Melbourne Festival, I think.
Melbourne.
I saw him perform there. He wrote this book that's just like a bunch of really crazy stories that happened to him, and they're so funny. And it just really was a delightful audiobook listen.
It's called Classic Scrapes.
James Acaster's Classic Scrapes by James Acaster.
I thought you said classic grapes, so I tried to look that up, and all I came up with was Grapes of Wrath. So I'm like, oh wait.
No, Classic Scrapes. Like scrapes he has gotten into. And it's kind of almost chronological. So like it starts with some stories of things that happened to him when he was a little kid, including a story about when he volunteered to be the juggler in like a Boy Scout performance, not knowing how to juggle, and then asking his dad to teach him how to juggle, and his dad also not knowing how to juggle, but not telling him that what he was teaching him was not juggling. Anyway.
Oh my God.
That kind of thing is like my favorite type of story. So that's my endorse horse for this week.
Great. Are you going to do a second endorse horse? Are you going to wait? Save it?
Maybe I'll save it. Because we've got a lot to get to still, and we haven't even done Chunch Chat.
That's true. Okay, let's do Chunch Chat. This will be a quick one.
Okay, it's time for Chunch Chat, our regular segment where we talk about any news in the world of Martha Stewart's pony, Ben Chunch.
Chunch.
When the clock strikes noon, we could have a picnic lunch, fine wine, full moon, and we're chatting about Chunch.
Ben Chunch.
I have no new Chunch news this week, but Susan Orlean, the writer who wrote like The Orchid Thief and the library book. I love her. She's one of my favorite authors. She drunk tweeted the other day. She went on like a tirade of drunk tweets. And even though I'm not on Twitter, I saw it.
Yes.
I guess
the important stuff is making it through the cracks.
It's making its way through. And she was in the middle of this drunk tweeting. She mentioned that her neighbor has a newborn baby horse. And she tweeted, okay, a newborn colt rocks it totally. And he thought my hand was his mom. It was not. He has tasted life's infinite tragedy. As I mentioned earlier, I am inebriated. And I would like to know where she lives. Because for a second, I was like, oh my God, does she live in Burbank? But no, I think she lives in like upstate New York or something.
Yeah, or like Connecticut or something. Oh my gosh. Susan Orlean, where do you live? It's so amazing that this happened.
I would like her to be my friend.
I feel like that's an attainable goal.
Maybe. Ugh.
Really great. Does that conclude Chunch Chat?
Yes.
That concludes Chunch Chat. We'll be right back with One on Fun.
One on Fun. Emily.
Yes.
I got one for you.
Okay.
What movie would you like to live inside of?
Oh, what movie would I like to live inside of? That is a great question. Because, like, I have the opportunity here to pick something where sort of, like, it's a completely different reality.
Yeah.
Or, like, a cartoon or something.
You're like, Groundhog Day. Oh, shit.
No. Absolutely not.
I just saw that movie, Palm Springs, and I really liked it. It was good.
I really liked it, too. I thought
it was
great.
Really funny. Yeah.
I also was thinking about, like I could live inside of, like, a Miyazaki and just, like, eat all the food and stuff, and that would be really, like, the food in, like, animated movies just looks so good. Or, like, I'm trying to think of, like, what movie had the best-looking food in it. That's what I want to live in.
Oh, like a Big Night or something like that?
Yeah, one of those like old like Robin Hood ones with the big turkey legs that just look really good, or like, yeah, I don't know. But
the Sword in the Stone, where you can become different animals and then eat a huge turkey leg.
Yeah. Something like that. But I don't know if that's smart. I don't know if that's a good use of living in a movie.
Yeah. Arthurian legend times were kind of weird for women, too. So,
yeah, exactly. Like, who am I in this scenario? But, like, also, oh, God, this is tough because I feel like I really want to get this right because what an opportunity this is, you know? I really am going to feel mad if I
know.
Don't.
You really shouldn't squander this opportunity.
I really shouldn't. Oh, God, what movie do I want to be in? Okay, I want to talk this out. Okay, so a kid's movie seems better because then there's no, like,
yeah,
there's no like rape in kids movies, and there's no like, not that that's like a thing I'm living under constant threat of, but it's just a risk of being in other movie worlds, you know what I mean? Like, and it's a risk I could eliminate from my own life in a way that I can't in the real world.
If you could live in like Ratatouille or some shit,
oh,
that would be good.
Yeah, Ratatouille would be great. That's a really good answer. Okay, yeah, like any Pixar movie. Yeah, like Ratatouille would be good, even though there is a lot of trash in that movie, and I'd love to live in a world without trash. I think that's a good answer.
And I want to live in, like, oh, sorry, what?
And I watched that movie pretty recently. Although, also, like, the Santa Claus, like, if I could live in the North Pole of the Santa Claus.
The Santa Claus.
There's really good, like, hot chocolate. What about you?
I think like Lord of the Rings or something would be
really
good.
Ugh, it seems so fraught with danger, and
I know, but at least it's like there's beautiful vistas everywhere and you're like in New Zealand and like,
right, and everyone does want to live in the Shire. Like the Shire does seem really cool to live in. That
I wouldn't go on any of the adventures. I would just stay behind in the Shire.
Yeah, that would be good. Lisa.
Yes.
If you were given a Super Bowl commercial slot where you could say whatever you want, but you couldn't advertise anything like a product or your show or anything, like what would you say with your Super Bowl commercial slot?
Oh my God. Right now? Something really boring. Probably just like fucking defeat Donald Trump and wear a fucking mask. I don't know. Like, this shit is serious. I don't know.
Let's say it's next year. Joe Biden is in the White House and the coronavirus is over.
Oh, wow. Oh, just imagine if that were to happen in a year. who knows? I don't know. It'd probably be something about like global warming and like stop buying huge SUVs. You don't need them.
Yeah.
Be more socially minded. Like,
yeah. Green New Deal now.
Yeah. I don't know. I would just be like ranting like a crazy leftist.
You could probably get a celebrity to do it, though. I think in the rules of this question, you can get a celebrity.
Oh, so it's not just me on camera being like universal health care.
Yeah, no, you can
like,
have
who the fuck is this?
You can have Chrissy Teigen do it if you want.
Oh, that would be helpful. It's like Chrissy Teigen, like Mark Ruffalo, like who else are those people that people generally like?
Do people generally like Mark Ruffalo?
I don't know.
Chris Evans, yeah.
How about Beyonce? It'd be Beyonce.
Yeah.
How could you say no to her? Just Beyonce, just a full minute of her talking about what's important.
I like that.
Yeah.
I think she'd be on board.
I think so.
All right. That concludes One on Fun. We'll be right back with Wiki of the Week. Hey guys, let's talk about KiwiCo. Believe it or not, a lot of kids are missing school right now as we head into summer break. If you have a kid learning at home or are looking for something fun for yourself, check out KiwiCo and get a science fair or art class delivered right to your door.
It's 2020 and the hottest new thing is projects. Just doing lots of little projects.
It's so funny how often me and my friends will talk about like, I need a new hobby. What am I going to do? And they just have so many options on their site for things
they
you can do.
I was looking today and in their Kiwi Crate, which is for ages 5 to 8, but also appeals to 37-year-olds, just FYI. Yeah. You can build an arcade claw and it like, it can pick up little pom-poms and stuff. And it
oh
just
my
seems
gosh,
fun.
That seems so fun. I was looking at the Maker Crate, which is ages 14 to 104, and they have like punch embroidery kits that teach you how to do punch embroidery, which is extremely fashionable right now. And I really want to learn how to do it. It looks so cool. You can make pillows and stuff, like those shaggy pillows.
You can make a little rug.
Yeah. Or like a macrame, like dangling plant holder. It's just.
It seems great.
You can
get KiwiCo and encourage your children to be innovators and creative thinkers. They won't believe what they can build and accomplish with KiwiCo.
I imagine as a parent, it's super hard to find creative and new things to keep your kids busy and challenged. And KiwiCo does the legwork for you so you can spend quality time tackling projects together at home.
There are different crates for kids of literally all ages. So there's something for every kid or adult on your list.
Yeah, KiwiCo is redefining play with hands-on projects that build confidence, creativity, and critical thinking skills. There's something for every kid or kid at heart at KiwiCo.
You can get your first month free on select crates at kiwico.com/geniuses.
That's KiwiCo.com/geniuses. Baby Geniuses is brought to you by Native.
Native is a wonderful deodorant that is vegan. It's never tested on animals. It's designed to block odor better with ingredients you've heard of like coconut oil, shea butter, and tapioca starch. It's my choice whether I stink or not. And when I decide not to stink anymore, I'm going to grab a Native deodorant.
I mean, okay, listen, we're body positive here. It's okay to stink, but sometimes it's rude to stink too.
And it, you know what I like to do is save it up for a while and get real stinky and then remake myself, like really like take a full shower and wash my hair. And then I put on actual deodorant and then I feel like a brand new person. I feel like the cleanest person in the world. I got sent some, and there's this coconut and vanilla scent. And okay, Emily, did you ever have those like chapsticks in the 90s called Lip Smacker?
Yes, I did, of course. Everyone okay. had Lip Smacker.
This reminds the scent reminds me of Lip Smackers.
Oh my gosh. I mean, like, there's nothing better than being reminded of smells like that.
I know. It's like nostalgia, but it also, I mean, it just smells really, really good.
Yeah.
And it's nice to have a deodorant that doesn't have aluminum in it, just because I don't know what aluminum does. I'm scared of it. So it's nice to have like a natural product.
Yeah. And switching doesn't mean you have to sacrifice on odor protection. And everyone's wearing deodorant for themselves right now, I think.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you might as well have one that smells the way you want it to smell. And they
it's
have...
like, just because we're in quarantine doesn't mean you shouldn't like wear things that smell nice. Please protect your quarantine buddies from your natural smells.
Yeah. With over 10 scents, including rotating seasonals, Native has something for everyone. Their most popular classic scents are coconut and vanilla, lavender and rose, cucumber and mint, and citrus and herbal.
They also have special limited edition scents for summer. They have one that's like cactus rose,
which I like that.
Would love to know what that smells like. But yeah, they have all kinds to pick from, and they have like sets of them, so you can get a whole bunch at once, and it's great.
This just seems like a nice upgrade to give yourself right now.
That's right.
Make the switch to Native today by going to nativedeo.com/geniuses or use promo code geniuses at checkout and get 20% off your first order.
That's nativedeo.com/geniuses or use promo code geniuses at checkout for 20% off your first order.
Woohoo! And we're back. Before we do Wiki of the Week, we're going to talk about the Max Fun Drive again.
Again,
here we go.
I just got a really nice message from my friend Ryan, who signed up for a Max Fun membership. And he said that your podcast is a highlight of each week. Not going to lie. I mean, you guys don't need to do it, but we, the listeners, need it. I thought that was nice. I do need to do this, Ryan. I need this on like a psychic level.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like our podcast has been a good reminder for me to get in touch with the stuff that I think is funny and silly and worth, like, worth directing my brain toward fun things for a little while and silly things and things that are interesting.
Yeah, I hope it helps our listeners feel slightly more sane, too.
And I will say, I've also been listening to a lot of other Max Fun shows during the pandemic, and it's been helping me so much. I've been listening to so much Judge John Hodgman.
Oh, I love John Hodgman.
I love it so much, and that show is so great, and just you can tell why it has been winning awards and why it's been on for so long and why he's just so good at it, and it's just such a nice, pleasant, like, gardening companion for me. And so, anyway, the point is, we've been hearing from people who value our work. We value the work of the other shows on Max Fun. And especially now, especially during this time of social distancing, it's like, it's nice to feel like the people that who shows you're listening to are your friends.
Yeah. I recommend Minority Corner. That's a great one.
Oh, yeah. Minority Corner is great. Fantize, also really great. I just think
My Brother, My Brother and Me. I've been listening to that one for years. It's always good for a laugh. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, having familiar voices to just make you laugh and feel normal, it's really important to a lot of people. And if that sounds like you, and if you're able to join, I encourage you to do so now.
Membership. If you want to give, membership at Max Fun starts at $5 a month, and that gets you all of the bonus content. You know, we don't have a Patreon or anything, so this is the best way to support us. Just $5 a month, and you can access everything. But if you choose to join at $10 a month, you can get a Max Fun membership card, a cool pin, and you also get the bonus content. And the pin this year is so good. It's an Endorse Horse pin.
Yes.
I love it.
We endorse this pin.
We endorse this pin.
Yeah. And if you join at $20 a month or more, you get this year's special gift, a Max Fun game pack featuring a custom dice set and a custom deck of playing cards, all with Max Fun designs. Just visit MaximumFun.org/join to become a member. You pay this much money sometimes for things like Netflix or Hulu or Apple TV, and they don't give you any kind of prizes.
Yeah, they never give prizes.
And the money doesn't go to directly support the artists the way it does with Maximum Fun. So
yeah, that's right.
And there's so many hours of entertaining content that you get access to for free, whether you become a member or not.
That's right.
Yeah, and if you want to support a little bit extra but aren't fully able to upgrade right now, you can also check out boosting your membership by an amount in between the levels. It doesn't qualify for the gifts, but it still directly supports the show, and we appreciate that so, so, so much.
Yeah, it's like a tip jar, basically. Just giving a little boost.
A little boost. We
especially want to thank all of you who are in healthcare or retail and other essential jobs right now. We really cannot function without you, and we're thinking about you a lot, and we're grateful to you for all the work that you do. It's really incredible how society needs you to function, literally.
Yeah, we're really seeing the value of that right now.
So
hopefully our show's bringing a little bit of light into your lives the way that you are bringing absolute functioning necessities into ours.
Our job, slightly less necessary.
Slightly less essential, but
hopefully brightens your day if you listen. Yeah.
And with that, let's get to Wiki of the Week. Oh my gosh, I can't believe we've already been recording for so long, and I have so much I want to say about this Wikipedia. I mean, this is going to be one of our longest episodes ever, and I want you to know that that's in part because of Max Fun, but also because I have been utterly obsessed with this topic ever since it was submitted to us. So
it's deep. I mean, we're not even going to be able to cover all of it.
We're not.
We'll give you some highlights.
We will give you some highlights. So this week's Wikipedia page, it was submitted by Abigail Cohen. And I will say, so Abigail submitted the Wikipedia page for Edinburgh of the Seven Seas. And that was a short, not super interesting Wikipedia page, because most of the interesting information about Edinburgh of the Seven Seas is actually on the page for Tristan da Cunha. And you'll understand why. So at first, like when we first got this page, I like didn't even consider covering it on the show. But then I got curious and I dug a little bit deeper. And that's when I've become totally, Lisa can attest to this. I've been texting her about this for 2 weeks and she keeps being like, save it for the podcast. But
yeah,
okay.
We don't want to talk about anything else other than this. Well, maybe sometimes we want to talk about onion checks
and Tristan da Cunha. So let's get into it.
Tristan da Cunha, colloquially Tristan, is a remote group of volcanic islands in the South Atlantic Ocean. It is the most remote inhabited archipelago in the world, lying approximately 1,511 miles off the coast of Cape Town in South Africa and about 1,300 miles from St. Helena and 2,100 miles off the coast of the Falkland Islands. It really is like, if you try to find it on a map, it is truly in the middle of nowhere. It gives me the creeps to even look at it.
It is so far away from any other place that people live.
It gives me, like, it triggers my agoraphobia to just look at, like, the map. I don't know why. It's just, there's nothing.
Why does it trigger your agoraphobia? Because it's like, it's so far away. It's like, it's isolated. Like, it's not.
That's scary.
It seems like an agoraphobe's dream.
No, it's like, it's the wide open space and like the distance from like anything. And if you're there, it feels like you're stranded. But I mean, they do have like society there. Like they have a hospital.
Yes. Okay. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
The territory consists of the inhabited island Tristan da Cunha, which has a diameter of roughly 11 kilometers, and the wildlife reserves of Gough Island and Inaccessible Island, and the smaller uninhabited Nightingale Islands. As of October 2018, the main island has 250 permanent inhabitants. Right now it's 244, according to their website, all carry British Overseas Territory citizenship. The other islands are uninhabited, except for the South African personnel of a weather station on Gough Island. Tristan da Cunha is a British Overseas Territory with its own constitution. There's no airstrip of any kind on the main island. The only way traveling out traveling in and out of Tristan is by boat, a 6-day trip from South Africa.
So that's terrifying to me. The fact that if you need to leave this island, it's a fucking 6-day boat journey.
It's a 6-day boat journey.
And that's a week on a boat.
It's so long. And so if you want to visit the island, the only way to do it, like the boat doesn't leave like every day. You have to be there for a month if you visit.
Because otherwise you can't.
You can't fly there. So there's one boat that will bring you in. Like the boats only go like 8 or 9 times a year.
I hate this.
I love it. I'm obsessed.
You're ready to move.
I'm ready. Well, no, I want to visit so bad. But of course, they're not letting anyone in right now because they have no coronavirus on the island.
It's like the one place without coronavirus.
Yeah. Okay. Them and New Zealand, I guess. History. The islands were first recorded as sighted in 1506 by Portuguese explorer Tristão da Cunha. The rough seas prevented a landing. He named the island after himself. It was later anglicized from its earliest mention on British Admiralty charts to Tristan da Cunha Island from Ilha de Tristão da Cunha. Some sources state that the Portuguese made the first landing in 1520 when the Las Rafael, captained by Rui Vaz Pereira, called at Tristan for water.
Let's see. Should I read this whole thing?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if we need to read the whole thing. The point is, it doesn't seem like it was, unless I'm mistaken, it doesn't seem like it had like indigenous inhabitants before its discovery. It's like a volcanic island that did not have people living on it.
Yeah.
Unless that has just been like wiped from this page somehow, but like it really seemed like an uninhabited island that people were.
Yeah, it's
that people
like,
found.
But then let's see, I'm scrolling down. Captain John Blanquette suggested to superiors on August 1786 that convicts be used to establish an English settlement on Tristan. So that was maybe the first settlement there.
Well, in consequence, the Admiralty received orders from the government in October to examine the island. So it didn't happen.
Oh, it didn't happen. Okay. No. So then the next segment talks about the first permanent settler.
Yes. But before that, what they used it for was as like a military outpost to prevent Napoleon from being rescued from St. Helen.
Cool.
So that's in the we're getting there, I guess. I'm confused about what century we're in, but yeah. So that was like that's what launched the investigation of Tristan, at the end of the 1700s. But in the 19th century, the first permanent settler was Jonathan Lambert of Salem, Massachusetts, who moved to the island in December 1810 with two other men and later a third.
He declared the islands his property and named them the Islands of Refreshment. But then three of the four men died in 1812. However, the survivor, Thomas Curry, or Tommaso Curry, remained as a farmer on the island. What, by himself?
I guess so.
That is nuts.
Yeah. On August 14th, 1816, the United Kingdom annexed the islands, making them a dependency of the Cape Colony in South Africa. This was explained as a measure to prevent the island's use as a base for any attempts to free Napoleon Bonaparte from his prison on St. Helena. The occupation also prevented the United States from using Tristan da Cunha as a base for naval cruisers as it had during the War of 1812. Possession was abandoned in November 1817, although some members of the garrison, notably William Glass, stayed and formed the nucleus of a permanent population.
Then the islands were occupied by a garrison of the British Marines, and a civilian population gradually grew. Finally.
Yeah.
Let's see. A Berwick stopped there on March 25th, 1824, reported that it had a population of 22 men and 3 women. Ooh.
Oh, my God. I like those odds.
I don't like them. That's too many men, not enough women. Let's see. Whalers set up bases on the islands for operations in the Southern Atlantic.
Okay. So it had a very small population, basically.
Let's jump to 20th century.
Yeah. After years of hardship since the 1880s and an especially difficult winter in 1906, The British government offered to evacuate the island in 1907. The Tristanians held a meeting and decided to refuse, despite the crown's warning that it could not promise further help in the future. No ships called at the islands from 1909 until 1919.
Wow, that's a long time with no ships.
With no ships, just on the island. When HMS Yarmouth finally stopped to inform the islanders of the outcome of World War I.
We're like, they don't know that the war has ended. We need to send a boat out there.
Yeah, and they didn't have any contact with the outside world if they didn't have that.
That's wild. To like go out there on a boat and not know like what's state happening. You're gonna find them in.
Yeah. In 1936, the Daily Telegraph of London reported the population of the island was 167 people with 185 cattle and 42 horses.
They got more cows than people.
Yeah.
Pretty good amount of horses though. Pretty good amount of horses. In December 1937 to March 1938, a Norwegian party made a dedicated scientific expedition to Tristan, and sociologist Peter Munch extensively documented island culture. He would later revisit the island in 1964.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to choose. Okay, here's something that I find really interesting. On January 2nd, 1954, Tristan da Cunha was visited by the MV Royce, a civilian freighter carrying science fiction writer Robert A. Heinlein, his wife Ginny, and other passengers. And this is a dude who was like later really good friends with L. Ron Hubbard. Anyway.
Oh, cool.
The Royce was traveling from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil to Cape Town, South Africa. The visit is described in Heinlein's book, Tramp Royal. The captain told Heinlein the island was the most isolated inhabited spot on Earth and ships rarely visited. Heinlein mailed a letter there to L. Ron Hubbard, mailed a letter probably while there to L. Ron Hubbard, a friend who also liked to travel, for the curiosity value of the postmark.
Here's for your stamp collection.
Yeah. Okay. So the big event, though, in the 20th century was on October 10th, 1961.
The eruption of Queen Mary's Peak forced the evacuation of the entire population of 264 individuals. So this volcano exploded.
Yes, the volcano that they all live on.
And it really is, the whole island is a volcano, clearly. Like, you look at an overhead picture of it, and it's just, you're living on a fucking volcano. Yeah. So evacuees took to the water in open boats and sailed to uninhabited Nightingale Island, where they were picked up by a Dutch passenger ship that took them via Cape Town to Britain. The islanders arrived in the UK to a big press reception, and they were settled in an old Royal Air Force camp near Calshot, Hampshire. And the following year, a Royal Society expedition reported that Edinburgh of the Seven Seas had survived the eruption. So most families returned in 1963, 2 years later.
2 years later, they all got evacuated to a completely different part of the planet and then returned.
Doesn't that makes me feel sort of like comforted somehow, like, I almost feel like, okay, it's almost like this pandemic. It's like we're leaving our regular lives for 2 years. And then
there's a way to go back in some ways.
Yeah. Like, if a fucking volcano can explode on your home and you can return after 2 years, then maybe there's some hope for normalcy here. Probably not. But just, you know.
Yeah.
I'm trying to draw connections here.
It's also interesting to think, like, you've been living on this isolated island and then you go live in England for 2 years and you're like, I want to go back to the island. Like, that's just fascinating to me.
But
I want to talk to those people. Yeah, I want to know.
I want to talk to the families that decided to stay in England and didn't go back to their island life, where they're like, nah, I like culture and like I like ordering curry to go. Like, I don't know what kind of food they have on the island, but probably not as good. I don't know.
I mean, there is a cookbook. It's a lot of potatoes.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, they eat a lot of potatoes there.
It's like potato and lobster.
Yes, potato and lobster.
That does sound good.
Yeah. Okay, I want to fast forward through some of this stuff because, okay, obviously there's like a lot of interesting like wildlife and stuff like that.
Ooh, I like this extra tropical cyclone that hit them. Killing cattle and ruining structures.
Oh, man. That's intense. You fucking sick fuck?
I don't get off on it. I just think it's interesting. Oh,
yeah.
My fetish for cyclones has come out.
It is interesting, like how much of their society can be sort of like interrupted by things like that. Like,
yeah.
That, because there's just so few people there. And wow,
there was an oil spill next to their island. Yikes.
Yeah. And they're also like, a solar eclipse will pass over the island on December 5th, 2048.
Oh, can't wait.
Yeah. but okay, I would love to. Okay. The flora and fauna is interesting.
Where do you want
to jump? I want to jump down to under fauna. On the land fauna, Tristan is primarily known for its wildlife. It has been identified as an important bird area by BirdLife International because there are 13 known species of breeding seabirds on the island and 2 species of resident land birds. These include northern rockhopper penguins, Atlantic yellow-nosed albatrosses, sooty albatrosses, Atlantic petrels, great winged petrels, soft plumage petrels, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of birds there. Okay.
And they're mostly like seabirds. Yeah.
Yeah. What I think is interesting, so there are no birds of prey on the island. And also, a non-native species of house mice have evolved to be 50% larger than average house mice and have adapted to Tristan da Cunha. So they are overrun with these giant mice, and they have no birds of prey.
Oh my God. They've adapted by consuming seabird eggs and chicks, killing an estimated 2 million chicks annually, pushing the species to extinction. Gathering at night in groups of 9 or 10, the mice gather at the bird's nest to feast. With no natural predators, the invasive mice population is able to expand by producing new generations twice a year. With no natural predators and a high generational output rate, there is no way to control the growth of the invasive mice population. Oh my God.
I mean, it's amazing. Okay. Mitigation plans in order to eradicate or decrease the invasive rodent population on the islands was seriously discussed in March 2008, taking into consideration the island's community. Discussion of aerial bait drop on Tristan brought up concerns of health and safety of the children, livestock, and the security of the water supply. Because the proposed plans for mitigation were not fully agreed upon by the Tristan community, eradication methods were shelved until 2019.
What did they do in 2019? They've partnered with the RSVP to spread cereal pellets with rodenticide bait across the Go Islands in hopes to eradicate the invasive mice population.
And they were going to use it by helicopter and then some by hand, I guess.
Other methods that may be more simple, such as introducing cats, would pose a greater threat to the fragile bird populations. Oh my God. So they're still
They're still dealing with this. It's happening now. They're dealing with it now. Their 30 to 50 feral hogs are just giant mice. but let's talk about the economy, because this is just, I'm just fascinated by the people who live here.
Me too.
So the island has a unique social and economic structure in which all resident families farm and all land is communally owned. Outsiders are prohibited from buying land or selling on Tristan. Besides subsistence agriculture, major industries are commercial fishing and government. Major export industries are the Tristan Rock lobster fishery, the sale of the island's postage stamps and coins, and limited tourism.
Do you want to get some Tristan stamps?
I want to get, they also sell, okay, so obviously we've done some outside of Wikipedia research on this page. They sell sweaters made from wool from their sheep, because they have sheep there, that produce 3 different colors of wool. And
have you ordered yours yet?
I haven't, because they don't really have the internet.
Oh.
They have the internet, but it's super limited. They didn't have phones until like 2007. So one thing that I think is really interesting, so I'm going to the website right now. So the community is really small. The economy is obviously really small. But I wanted to find, I'm looking for the thing on the page about the internet, because they didn't get, it wasn't, it, they can't like stream anything, obviously.
Yeah.
They can only, like, they didn't have phones until 2007 because it just like was too expensive to install. And they don't have fast internet. So in order to order stuff from them, you have to like, I basically am going to have to call them on the phone. And that's been the real, yeah. You fill out this like online order form, but then you just like do it by hand, I guess. And then you, I guess, email it to them. I'm not sure.
That's so crazy. Yeah, I'm looking at like the order form. Yeah, because you got to get that recipe book too. So yeah. you can contact the handicraft and souvenir shop by email. But yeah, I wonder. You can send money via PayPal. So they do take PayPal.
They do take PayPal. Like they're connected to the internet, but so limited.
It's also, I was trying to figure out, because they're selling these like heavy woolen sweaters. And I'm like, what is the climate there? And it says it's a wet oceanic climate with mild temperatures, very limited sunshine, but consistent rainfall. But then it's also humid subtropical climate due to the lack of cold weather.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, it says sunshine hours are comparable to Juneau, Alaska. It's just so weird. I cannot tell, like, is this like a tropical island or like a, does it feel
I
like?
I think it's temperate.
Yeah.
So I think it's a temperate island, and I think they wear the sweaters, and the sweaters say Tristan da Cunha, and they have a picture of an albatross on them.
They're so cute.
They're so cute.
They remind me of like curling sweaters or something. Like they're just very specific and beautiful.
So here's the thing that I think is really, I'm like, oh yeah. So they have very limited phones and internet. Internet access was available in Tristan da Cunha from 1998 to 2006, but its high cost made it almost unaffordable for the local population, who primarily used it only to send email. The connection was also extremely unreliable, connecting through a 64 kilobit satellite phone connection provided by Inmarsat. Since 2006, a very small aperture terminal has provided 3,072 kilobits of publicly accessible bandwidth via an internet cafe. As of 2016, there is not yet any mobile telephone coverage on the islands.
Yeah. There's amateur radio operator groups sometimes conduct de-expeditions on the island. I don't know what that means, but...
Yeah. So... Here's what I think is really interesting, and I don't think we necessarily even need to read more of the Wikipedia page. I just want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I just want to talk about this fucking island.
The government stuff is weird. There's no political parties.
There's no political parties. Well, there are only seven families there, basically. There's seven last names on the island.
Yeah.
Which it's like, they're so inbred, which is also really interesting.
The male founders shared nine surnames: Collins, Glass, Green, Hagen, Lavarello, Repetto, Rogers, Squibb, and Swain.
Yeah. And I think two of those have no more heirs.
Yeah.
So, or like no more named heirs. So,
the only religion is Christianity.
Yes. The only religion is Christianity. Healthcare is funded by the government, undertaken at most times by one resident doctor.
Jesus Christ. Just one doctor. Surgery or facilities for complex childbirth are therefore limited, and emergencies can necessitate communicating with passing fishing vessels so the injured person can be ferried to Cape Town. As of late 2007, IBM and Beacon Equity Partners, blah, 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 have supplied the island's doctor with access to long-distance telemedical help, making it possible to send EKG and X-ray pictures to doctors in other countries for instant consultation. Jesus. See, that's the shit that scares me.
Fascinating. Yeah. See, and I understand that. They do have a one-bed hospital, which I think is really fascinating.
There's a very high 42% incidence of asthma among the population. That's interesting. So it's a genetic
And apparently they've been used as a, like, a study on the genetic effect of, or the effect of genetics on asthma, because it's so clearly... Like, they're in the same gene. Everyone's in the same gene pool there. Please go to the website for Tristan da Cunha, because it has, well, first of all, it's such a small community. They have a picture of every person's wedding. They celebrate people's birthdays on their, like, on their island website for, like, everyone's birthday. christenings, obituaries, like, everyone. I think, so, okay, here's a bunch of stuff that I think is really interesting. First of all, yeah, if you want to visit, you have to be there for a month. You're not allowed to move. They don't let outsiders move there. Like, even the doctors who work at the hospital have, like, 2-year contracts.
Wow.
And it seems like they would want new people to move there and provide more genes for the gene pool.
No.
Am I wrong to think about it that way? Like, I can't stop thinking about that.
I know. It's so interesting. But then also, I guess if you live there, wouldn't you be sort of scared by outsiders?
I guess so. I would think you would be fascinated by outsiders. So I read this account from this guy from National Geographic who went there for a month. And he said people were, like, really interested in meeting him. Like, when he was there, it was like everyone knew he was there. He stayed there for a month. And, like, it was, like, he met everyone. They also do a thing where they, when the mail comes, they all go to the they all go to the auditorium and they hand out the mail at the auditorium.
That's so exciting.
They call out people's names. Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the map of the...
Yes, please. It's so interesting because so you and I have been planning to talk about this for weeks. And now that we're here, I'm just so overwhelmed with things I want to say that I feel totally scattered.
I mean, if we find out, I feel like this is now like a canonical like interest of our podcast. And so we can bring it up in subsequent episodes if we continue to discover more about
Tristan. I'm going to keep talking about Tristan de Cunha forever, but yes.
We don't have to cover it all. This is just an introduction. So, you know, this will be our episode we refer back to. But like, I just want to say they have some place names on this map of that are very old-timey. They have places on this island called West Jews Point and East Jews Point, which is strange.
Oh, boy. Yes. How did those things get named?
And then they have a thing called, like, down where the minister land his things. So it's like... And they have, like, ridge where the goat jump off. So I just assume...
They're like, these are our big historical events.
One time, a goat jumped off this ridge. The pond's up the eastern. They just have strange Hottentot Gulch.
Oh, my God.
It's really, really fun.
Yeah, the map is really good. Yeah, I like also that they have First Gulch followed right after by Third Gulch.
Yeah.
Where is Second Gulch, guys?
It's also, it's crazy how much of the island is just taken up by this volcano. It seems like most of the island you cannot even, like, traverse.
Yeah. The settlement is really small. The settlement is just, like, in a really small part of the island.
Close to Pig Bite. That's another name. Pig Bite.
And it is really interesting, too, because it's like everyone on the island does the same stuff. Like, they all do the fishing. They all do the farming. They all do the weaving. Like, it's all super communal. And it just seems I'm just so fascinated by people who live here. Part of what happened was I tried to, like, when I was first reading about this, I was like, I want to just, like, go on Instagram and see, like, do any of the teenagers there have Instagram accounts? And no, they don't, because they don't have phones.
Ugh.
And I
want them.
All I want is to see what they would post on Instagram.
I want these Tristan people to all have TikToks. Even though in a way that would, like, sort of corrupt their, you know.
Yeah.
Their form of life. Like, oh, they have holidays. The island holds an annual break from government and factory work, which begins before Christmas and lasts for 3 weeks. The beginning of the holiday, called Breakup Day, is usually marked with parties and celebrations. Great.
I love that.
Their website is such a just labyrinth of information and photos. It's,
as you can imagine, for an island that does not have steady internet access, their website is not the most user-friendly website. You can get lost.
It feels like the Wild West days of the internet where you could just deep dive on someone's GeoCities page and like find all these weird links. Like, oh, they have a sheep shearing day on Saturday, the 14th of December.
Oh my gosh.
Great.
Yeah. And they have pictures of like everyone's wedding and everyone's christening. And it's so interesting because it is like eventually everyone on this island starts to kind of look alike.
Yeah.
Like that's another thing that has just like really ignited my imagination of like when you live on this island. You know who, there's like three people you could possibly marry, right?
I know, yeah.
Like,
that's weird. What if you hate them?
Right?
And you do have so much in common.
Yeah. So there's a chart on the website too of like the Tristan resident family totals. So it says there are 244 Tristan da Cunha Islanders. Presently, 16 resident Islanders are overseas. There are an additional 22 people living on the island, including expatriate workers and their families and visitors. So there are 250 people currently living on Tristan da Cunha or visiting the surrounding islands. And so the population figures on the website, as updated on June 25th, 2020, following the death of Gilbert Lavarello on June 3rd, unfortunately. So for the Collins surname, there is one female currently.
Oh my God.
For the Glass surname, there are 15 male and 16 female, so for 31 total. The Green surname, 31 men, 33 female, 64 total. Hagen, 3 male, 5 female, 8 total. Lavarello, 5 male, 7 female, 12 total. Repetto, 19 male, 23 female, 42 total. So there, Green is the most common last name there, followed by Repetto. Rogers has 12 male, 14 female, 26 total. Squibb, 2 men, 2 women, 4 total. Swain, 24, 32, 56. Anyway, so right now on the island, there are 111 male residents, 133 female residents.
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
They just celebrated Gladys Lavarello's 90th birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Gladys.
Happy birthday, June 28th.
I have one more thing I want to talk about that I found on this page, and that is Ratting Day. And Ratting Day is happens once a year, and it's when everyone goes out and there's a competition to see who can catch the most rats with your dogs. And they catch the rats, and then they count the number of rat tails for the rats you've caught. And there's a prize for who gets the most tails. In 2020, this happened in April, and the prize went to the Coolers with a total of 44 tails per man.
Oh my God.
And the prize for the longest tail went to Jack's Pieces with a tail the length of 30.5 centimeters. And after giving out the prizes, all the groups gathered to celebrate their winnings. And there's just lots of pictures of people checking their rat traps and hunting for rats with their dogs.
Or are these extra big mice? But anyway, continue.
Yes, they're extra large mice, which maybe they've just started calling rats. And then the last picture is women cooking food on the fire for the men. Because the men go hunting while the women cook.
Oh my God.
I guess. Jack's Pieces also won last year for the number of tails and the longest tail.
Wow. I love this.
I love this so much.
And they have a weekly dance every Saturday night, I think.
Oh my God.
This is the last thing I want to talk about. On the website, if you want to plan a visit, they have a 6-page document of terms and conditions for if you want to visit. And I just want to read some of these rules of how you actually can go about visiting. You have to request permission stating the full purpose and duration of your expected stay from the Island Council to visit Tristan da Cunha, providing that berths on the visiting ships be available for passengers. So you have to like basically hope that there's room on the boat. There's like 12 seats on the boat. And if residents want to travel on the day that you're going to travel, you might lose your seat. You have to have a copy of your passport sent to the administrator of the island. The bookings have to be made through the administrator's office. Tickets have to be paid in full in advance. Visitors are advised to book open dated return refundable air tickets and flexible hotel bookings in Cape Town. You also have to, the visitor and his accompanying dependents must have sufficient adequate means to support themselves on the island.
Oh my God.
A certificate of good health may be required. International medical insurance coverage is required. A prospective visitor who is addicted to drugs or any habit-forming substances will be refused to visit. A visitor who is suffering from a contagious disease mm-hmm. or from any mental illness that may require medical treatment for which the available medical facilities are inadequate may be refused to visit. There's just so many rules, and I'm like, I still want to go.
You should get to go someday.
When COVID long is over. in the future. But I'm just fascinated by everything about this. So anyway, we should probably wrap it up because it's already such a long episode, but I'm just so...
In the chat, I sent you a link to one of the Ratting Day pages. And if you just scroll to the bottom, you can see a pile of chopped off rat tails. And then it said, and that's the tail's end.
I am not going to click on this link.
I'm glad I warned you. It's really disturbing.
Oh, my God.
But I don't blame them because they do have a huge mice problem.
Yikes. Yeah.
So they're doing what they got to do. This is great, and I love it.
Yeah, it's great. Thank you so much for sending us this. I'm just, if anyone has any more information about them, I just want to know. I'm trying not to be too, like, gawky about it, but it's just fascinating to me.
I'm being fully gawky.
Yeah.
I'm a gawker stalker.
Yeah. Oh, boy. All right.
It's interesting.
It's so interesting. It's just the most fascinating thing in the world to me. I love it so much. I'm sure I'll think of more things to say that I forgot to talk about on here.
We'll do it next time.
It's time now for What Did I Learn?
What did I learn?
Lisa, what did you learn today?
I learned there's like a peachy kind of pepper that you have that's spicier than a jalapeno, but not as spicy as a habanero.
Yes.
And it's beautiful. I saw pictures of it on your Instagram.
Thank you.
Your garden is looking super lush lately.
Thank you. Yeah, it's getting like there. It's
the way you've arranged it with like the rocks and the stepping stones and stuff too. It's so nice.
Thank you. Yeah, I still have more work to do, but
of course.
I'll always have more work to do. That's what having a garden is.
Exactly. It's never ending, but it's really, you've really stepped it up. It's like serious garden.
I learned that, what did I learn? I learned that, they have a prize for whoever kills the most giant mice on the island of Tristan da Cunha.
That's right.
Yeah. They also have job listings on their website for being a teacher or a doctor there. So you should check that out if you want to live there. Anyway, that's our show. Thank you to everyone who listens and for being part of our community. If you've taken the extra step to join as a Max Fund member, thank you for making our show possible.
Thank you.
We love you so much. If you haven't had a chance to become a member yet, you can do so at MaximumFun.org/join and find out more about all of the cool prizes and stuff. It's not a prize. What's the gifts? It's
a gift?
Yeah.
A reward, a treat, a little treat for us all. We really appreciate all of you. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We love making the show. We love
it's
chatting
so fun
with each
for
other.
Us. It's
we
so
love
fun.
All of the weird stuff you guys send us. It's great.
It's the best.
Well.
Thank you to our producer, Rob Parra.
Thank you to Nate Heller for our theme songs. And
goodbye.
Yay.
Baby geniuses, we know everything. Baby geniuses, we know everything. Geniuses, we know everything. Baby geniuses, we know everything.
I started listening to Ono, Ross, and Carrie shortly after I broke my arm, and the doctor had told me I'd never walk again.
I couldn't get my book started.
I was lost, honestly.
I knew it was time to make a change.
There's something about Ono, Ross, and Carrie that you just can't get anywhere else.
They're thought leaders, discoverers, founders.
I'd call them heroes.
Ross and Carrie don't just report on fringe science, spirituality, and claims of the paranormal. They take part themselves.
They show up so you don't have to.
But you might find that you want to.
My arm is better. I can walk again.
I wrote an entire book this weekend. It's terrible, but I did it.
Just go to MaximumFun.org.
Thank you, Ross and Carrie.
Ono, Ross, and Carrie is just a podcast. It doesn't do anything. It's just sounds you listen to in your ears. All these people are made up. Goodbye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.